Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with weight loss and life coach, Dr. Deb Butler. Deb and I spoke about her podcast, Thinner Peace, understanding hunger in menopause, and the difference between coaching and dieting. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now onto my conversation with Deb. Dr. Deb Butler, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lisa. It is so good to be here, and I'm so happy for us to be able to communicate and share our information together. I think we have a lot of things in common, and
Absolutely.
I can't wait for the listeners to get something that maybe they have never heard before.
Wonderful. That is very, very nice to hear. And I too hope that the listeners will take something away from this episode for sure, and ideally something new. So, yeah, Deb, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today. What made you want to get into this field?
Well, it's a long story, so I'll make it really short. But I used to be a practicing chiropractor, and I had my own office, and I practiced with my husband for about 35 years. And I just got into a place in my 50s where I felt like I needed to be doing something different. And I don't think that I needed to be working on people's bodies anymore. I felt like my calling was more to help people with their minds because it seems like the whole time I was practicing chiropractic, I was doing a lot of talking and spending too much time and couldn't keep my appointment book at the time because I loved talking to people and helping them understand why they weren't doing what they needed to be doing. Because everybody, it seems, wants certain things for themselves, and yet there's things that get in their way. And I had a hard time just working on bodies, helping them do that. And so I really wanted to get more into the mind and what are the obstacles in the mind that get in the way of people just getting what they want out of life. And it included myself because I was in a space, I was in menopause, I was feeling kind of cray cray. And, discontent, which I think happens to a lot of women around this age due to hormonal changes. And I think it's the way that we were designed. I think we were designed to, by the time that we get to 50, that we have a wisdom inside of us that needs to be seen and brought out. And I don't think we can do it sooner. I don't think we know who we are yet. So, around this 50-year stage for myself was chiropractic is not really what I need to be doing anymore. And I started getting into life coaching. And life coaching, especially like maybe 15 years ago, nobody really knew what it was. Now it seems everybody is a life coach. And it's kind of the same thing with a chiropractor. When I became a chiropractor 35 years ago, nobody knew what it was. Now, chiropractors, everybody knows what a chiropractor is, and it's not a strange thing to do. So, I would say that at this stage, I also was a lifetime Weight Watcher member, and I had been going to Weight Watchers since I was in my mid-20s, and I felt I had a good handle on my weight because whenever I gained weight, I'd go back to Weight Watchers and lose the weight. So that's what I did for 35 years, is I would gain my 20 pounds, go back to Weight Watchers, count my points. As soon as my points were counted and my weight was down, then I would go back to my old shenanigans. Now I'm a chiropractor, nutritionist. I know all the things, but there was something so emotional going on during this whole time that I never looked at because I thought I had my weight under control. And it was during this 50, when I was in my 50s, that I realized that I was eating and drinking more than usual because I was also more discontent than usual. And as long as I was eating and drinking, I didn't have to deal with being discontent.
Wow, thank
So,
you so much, yeah, for sharing some of this. No, this is really, really great. There's so much to
crazy.
go into for sure. So the first thing I want to say is that I think it's so interesting and it's great that more and more research is coming out about that menopause transition and just menopause in general, and how really there's a brain restructuring happening. It's not just like when
Totally.
people say, or when women say, like, I feel like a different person, most of the time, at first at least, they say that in a negative connotation,
That's
but
right.
really it is just like you said, a different phase in life. If we're looking at maybe pre-menstrual, like before we even have our menstruation, that being one phase, and then the fertile years, and then that last sort of wonderful phase in life. And I don't know if you're familiar with Arthur C. Brooks. He's like a quote unquote happiness researcher,
Yes.
and he talks about not just for women but for men also, how at some point, usually we kind of call it like a midlife crisis or something like that, and we transfer or have the urge to transfer what we were first learning or maybe practicing into something that he calls crystallized intelligence. So oftentimes it means like you want to teach, you want to pass on your knowledge, you want to just transfer into like a little bit of a different position. And it sounds like that's exactly what you were experiencing, and I absolutely love that. And the first thing that you mentioned is exactly what I want to get into. You talked about, why are people not actually doing what they want to be doing? I think this is a really, really great topic to talk about, especially at this time of the year, as we're recording this in January. A lot of
Yes.
people by now will have probably already stopped some of their New Year's resolutions. Maybe a few days ago, they were still like, oh, yeah, let's do this. And maybe by now, or maybe in 3 weeks' time at the latest, they have already ditched that. So please enlighten us in your opinion, or also personal experience. Why aren't we doing the things that we actually want to be doing?
Well, we have to really want to be doing them. And I think a lot of people think they should be doing a lot of things that they maybe don't actually want to be doing. And so I think even, as I gotten more into the mind and into the life coaching aspect, is that you have to work with the mind so that the mind actually wants to do it. So for instance, if we're talking even about exercise and moving our bodies, I mean, the reason we move our bodies, physiologically speaking, is because we were wired that when we're stressed, we need to move. We are wired that way. So when you see little kids, and I was just around my granddaughter and I was at their preschool, and they take the kids up to this big bike room, they call it, where there's a lot of bikes and they can run around. And you can see, I mean, they can't get on these little bikes fast enough, and they just start running around the gym fast because they're letting off energy. And nobody said to them, okay, now it's time to go lift weights and we're going to go upstairs. And because if they, oh, what do we have to do? Like by the time that we're adults, we're taught that we have to exercise, and all of a sudden, what was once play becomes something that's difficult and a burden and it's hard. But when you see these little kids, they're nobody, you're not making them do anything. They can't get out there fast enough. They can't, and you just see the smiles on their faces and the exuberance. And that is what I want to teach women in their 50s, that that's is really what is inside of them too. It's always been there, but boy, our minds start telling us we're fat and we don't do enough and we need to get out there and we need to do 1 hour and 2 hours and 3 hours a day of something, and our brains just go, I don't think so. I don't feel like it. It sounds too hard. And so that is what I think we're up against. When people aren't doing what they want to be doing, it's because there is dissonance in their brain about what they should be doing and what they want to be doing. And to be able to put those two things together where it's accepted 100% is when change takes place. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I love how you put the aspect of play back into
Yes.
that. Like, I really think We, as in like our modern culture, we've forgotten the art of play, and we are
We have.
discouraging the art of play. Like even within kids and teenagers these days, it's very sad to see that this is no longer encouraged in that way. And yeah, adults
That's
often,
right.
like if you have free time, like, and you don't have social media access or whatever, what are people doing? Like they don't even know what to do with themselves. So
That's right.
truly encouraging that and encouraging us to find and lean into the things that we truly find joy in, or maybe used to find joy in and then have to rediscover that joy, is absolutely wonderful. And I think finding that alignment, or I guess better said, creating that clarity first of what do you
Yeah.
truly want, and what do you truly want, not what do your does your partner want for you, what do your kids
That's right.
expect of you, what does your do your parents expect of you, or society, but what do you truly want, and also you at this stage of life, not you 20 years ago, because that's
That's
a
right.
quote unquote mistake I see people make as well, where it's like, oh, I felt so good in my body's in my late 20s, or I want to get back to this and that point. Like, well, that was a different stage in life. You had
That's
less
right.
stressors, you had different responsibilities, and so on. You cannot compare yourself to that version. And one thing that's been like helpful for me when it comes to creating change is just telling myself that if I want to create a new identity or a new life, I'll have to let go of a part of my old one. And I think while that seems like really simple and straightforward, a lot of people don't embrace that or don't recognize that it does have to come with sacrifice. And sometimes that is going to have to be quite painful or quite drastic, really. While the steps to get there are baby steps, I always encourage people to take small action, but consistently. But the change has to be, or like saying to yourself, you're gonna have to sacrifice part of your old you, part of your old identity, if you want different results, has been helpful for me.
Yes, I agree. And learning how to deal with discomfort, right? Because even like when it comes to, I'm sure we'll be talking about it, like the idea of my concept of eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full, and dealing with the idea that when you have had enough food, what makes you, do you stop because you've had enough food? Or do you want to keep going? Sometimes for some people, it's very uncomfortable if they're used to eating more food, or they're used to cleaning their plate, or they're used to, if other people are eating, they need to continue to eat. To stop eating is very uncomfortable. And so not only are you dealing with the idea that it's time to stop, you're also dealing with the discomfort of watching what's going on around you in your brain saying you shouldn't stop. You know, something simple like that, but it's eating brings up so many brain issues of using food not for fuel, but using food to make us feel more comfortable with the discomfort that we're feeling. And it's even like when I was leaving chiropractic and going into life coaching, and I found myself eating and drinking more, it was because I was much more uncomfortable. And if I wouldn't have had a coach at that time and hadn't asked me the question of why do you eat when you're not hungry, that simple question, because I was just used to Weight Watchers, just tell me what to eat, how many points, I'll get the weight off and we'll be done. As opposed to, well, why do you eat when you're not hungry? I go, what's that got to do with anything?
Yeah, really.
Right? And yet, I was eating when I wasn't hungry because I was uncomfortable and I was frustrated and I didn't like where my career was going. And if I would have kept it up, I could not have changed my career because I didn't know how uncomfortable I was.
Wow, so powerful and so like insightful, really. And I love that. Looking into when do I actually stop eating, and I think your whole that th this is where a big part of your coaching mindfulness really comes
Yes.
into place, because I guess when I hear you say we need to learn to stop when we're eating f or when we are full, I think people can sometimes hear that in a wrong way, when it's like, oh, I feel full, like I'm almost like, whoa, you know, that kind of full
Right.
full, whereas like more that Japanese principle of like 80% full and you stop, not when you feel like, oh, I can't eat anymore. That's not the type of full that we're talking about. And but I think often we almost miss that exit ramp, so to speak, because we're eating so fast, or we are eating distracted with the TV on, with and you're before you know it, you've cleaned the whole plate, even though you didn't actually want it all, or you ate whatever was in front of you, even though you weren't actually that hungry. So I guess my questions to you will be, how do we practice more mindful eating? And also, how do we learn to get back in touch with our body to learn what is what full actually looks like?
Such a good question and leads into how I teach that. Because it's, you're right, what is full is such a great question, right? So I give a hunger scale from a negative 10 to a plus 10. Plus 10 is stuffed, and a negative 10 is starving. Now, that gives you a big leeway of how hungry you can be and how full you can be, right? So I start working on numbers and giving numbers of when to start and when to stop, according to w the research that I've done with working with so many clients over decades and realizing there's a number really for most people about what hungry is and what full is. And so I teach people to eat between the twos, which means start at a negative two. Now you realize a negative two isn't that hungry compared to a negative 10, which is starving. Right? And it's the same thing. If I'm asking you to stop at a plus two, but a plus 10 is stuffed, many people, what I want them to do first is just get accustomed to what they're doing in their body. Just start to identify what your numbers actually are. Like if you know that 10 is stuffed, when do you usually stop? It's just the beginning of checking in. Well, I usually stop. I like in the days of Weight Watchers, I would stop at about a plus six. I could lose weight and eat to a plus six. See how that connection and weight loss sometimes don't even go hand in hand, right? Because it depends what you're eating. And I learned how to find things that were 0 points that I could fill myself up with because I never wanted to be hungry because I didn't like that feeling and it scared me. So I always wanted to be as full as possible and as hungry as possible. And when I started learning these techniques, it was such an awakening of when it really is time to start and how little you really need to feel sated. You know, what is satisfaction really? First, you have to get it out of your mind. What is it? You know, like for me, my mind was, if I'm not really, really full, I'm going to feel something that's not going to feel good. It's called an emotion. If I eat enough, if I eat enough, I won't feel that. And I won't go hungry, but I'll still lose weight. Or I would be on some, I've done many diets where I'd be starving because that was part of the protocol, or I wasn't eating at all, or I wasn't eating enough, and I was always so hungry. I have so many people that I work with that are so afraid of going hungry that they want to eat before they get hungry because they don't want to get hungry because they're so afraid of it. You know, all of these diet things that we have done over the years has messed so much up with our mind and body connection. So just the beginning of, do you know when you're hungry? Can you name the number? And do you know when you're full? Can you name the number? And it may not be, you don't start with the twos, you just start where you are. Where are you? Most people don't know.
Awareness really is key. That is so wonderful. And what I'm taking from this approach also is that it's teaching people to have things in moderation, something that we are often not used to anymore. It's like when I
Yeah.
often hear, like, I can't have these cookies in the house because if I do, I have to have them all. And
Yes.
that is something like from once you get to that place of, yes, I can eat to just a two, that means, or that would also imply, you can have just a cookie or two, enjoy it, and put the package back. You don't feel controlled by the food. And I really, really like what you were saying there. And I think when it comes to the not wanting to feel hungry that is often, or like any hunger at all, it's often helpful to almost step outside ourselves and talk to us in like a third ourselves in like a third person way of like, you're okay, you are not going to starve if you're a little bit
That's
hungry.
right.
This is just a primal instinct kicking in.
That's
It's
right.
absolutely normal. It has kept you alive so far. Thank you, instinct. Thank you, internal voice. But
That's
we're
right.
just going to bench that for now. You're absolutely going to be fine. And you know that your next meal is coming up in,
That's right.
whenever you actually are hungry, because those drives can feel so real when you have that
Yes.
internal, oh, I need to eat, I need to eat, I need to eat. I can't be
That's right.
hungry. But then, yeah, I think just learning to step outside of ourselves can be helpful with that. And when we started talking about mindful eating, you also mentioned that you and many other people, myself also included in the past, have used or are using food also to quote unquote deal with their emotions. So,
Right.
with your teaching and coaching and strategies, what are some better ways we can learn to deal with our emotions other than food? Because we all have stressful lives. We all go through
That's right.
emotional turmoil, whether we're looking to step outside our role in a job or not. So yes, please
That's
share
right.
your strategies with us.
Well, first of all, it starts with awareness. So that once you start working with your physical hunger, and you actually know when you need to be eating and when you need to be stopping, then we start dealing with the emotional hunger scale, which is another scale like the physical hunger scale, but it deals with emotions. So many people are used to filling emotional hunger with food and thinking it, their brain's telling them they're hungry. A lot of people think they're hungry when it's emotional hunger. And so that is the next step, is differentiating. Like, there are probably some times when you know it. But when I do it step by step like this, like first, just, all I want you to do is identify your numbers. I don't care what else you're doing. But I want you to be able to identify your numbers at every single meal. And so all of our listeners that are listening today, if they don't take anything else away from this, but this one thing, when you stop listening to me today at your next meal, see if you can start identifying what your number is when you start and what your number is when you stop. And do that for, say, 3 to 6 meals. You don't have to write anything down, just in your head, so that you have an idea. Listen, you're not going to go past your 50s with no mind-body connection and expect to have a proactively healthy life. You might be able to get away with it before. Because the younger you are, the more your body can adapt to all the crazy stuff that you do. So I don't know about you, but when I was in my early 20s, I did things that I don't even want to talk about. And I got through college. I've got degrees, and I did a lot of things to my body that if I did it now, I probably would be dead. The older we get, the more connected we need to be with our bodies if we want to age in a proactive way. So, for instance, when I was in my 20s, the things that I did in my 20s, I couldn't get away with now. I would be dead. I think I would be dead. I do. And so when we hit our 50s and our body goes through this transition from a hormonal standpoint, from a brain standpoint, there are probably such strong reasons for it that's going to help us survive into a much older age if we use it right. Because we have the wisdom. And now, if we have this connection to our body, that maybe we've never had before, just starting with, do you know when you're hungry and do you know when you're full? It's the most basic connection that we have because we eat so much, more than anything, more than sleeping, more than our pain levels, and all of those have a lot to do with our connections. But the biggest thing is, do you know when you're hungry and do you know when you're full and are you connected? And the more connected you get to your hunger, the more connected you're going to get to these other things, like, do you know when to put yourself to sleep? Do you know when it's time to rest? Do you know when it's time to stop doing? Do you know when your body is saying, I don't have anything left, stop?
Yeah, so Deb, let me ask you a question because, of course, nowadays in our environment with things like quick deliveries, with processed things, with sugary drinks, we can drink our calories and so on, all things that make it a lot harder for us to actually feel satiated, even though we're consuming a lot of calories or a lot more than we would perhaps normally. So my question to you is what, I guess, pointers or recommendations or so do you give people so that they are not, their hunger cues are not being too influenced by just consuming a highly processed diet or, like making quote unquote small mistakes like that? Because I believe if you were to just eat processed things all the time or order online, you would rate your hunger very differently than if you were probably eating, more vegetables or whatever else. So, yeah, please give us some maybe some po practical pointers without necessarily calling it a diet, because that's not what it is.
Well, one of the things I call the process that I do, it's called the thinner piece process. And thinner meaning the inner peace. So, how to become peaceful inside with what you're putting in your mouth and how you're looking at yourself. So, we can all be, I've been thin many times, but I have not been at peace. And I think we're talking to a lot of people who are scared to death of gaining weight, scared to death of eating a chocolate cookie because they think they're going to lose control. There is so much of that peaceful component. So, one of the things that I do, just like I teach a physical hunger scale and an emotional hunger scale, I talk about the different types of eating. And one of the types of eating is just called fuel eating. And fuel eating means what you deem nutritious food for your body. Now, I think most of the people that I work with know what their fuel foods are. And I think they know when they're eating it and they know when they're not. And I also know that they want me to tell them what their fuel foods are because there's so much insanity about what you should be eating that it's hard to know. But I think most of us down deep know what that is and know what it isn't. So I just start with the idea of I think we need to be eating fuel 80% of the time, 70 to 80% of the time, what you consider nutritious food for your body. And the other 20% or 30% can be joy eating. And joy eating is non-nutritious food that you enjoy. So it's a way of making sure that there are no foods that you can't have. You can eat whatever you want. And I think the mindfulness and the thought properties that I would love people to have is to be able to believe that they can eat whatever they want. Now, I used to think if only I could eat whatever I wanted, because I thought I would be eating potato chips all day long. As long as I didn't gain any weight, I would want to be eating potato chips. And I would envy women that I saw who were thin that were eating those foods. And I think, why can't I be like that? But this is what I know. What I was looking at was I was looking at somebody that I felt was free. And what I want people to realize is that if you eat cookies, it doesn't mean you're going to eat cookies all day long if you have the thought, I can eat whatever I want. You usually will eat cookies all day long when you believe you can't have them because you need to get them all in because tomorrow you're never going to eat them again. Those are mindsets. And I would say 9 out of 10 women that I coach have that issue. of that they shouldn't be eating them. So therefore, when they are eating them, they aren't really enjoying them. They're getting them in so that they don't ever eat them again. Tomorrow, next week, next year, whatever it is. And when you were referring to all the processed food and the sugary foods, those are in the joy food category. So I'm not recommending that you eat those a lot, right? If they're a joy eat and you're eating them a small amount of time, then you're putting them in terms of, like, I almost think that I don't look at the hunger scale as much. When I'm looking at joy eating, I look more at the mindfulness of the enjoyment factor. I think you need fuel food to fill up your gas tank. So I think when you're hungry, you need fuel food. But I think that as you're filling up, and it kind of goes with nutrition and physiology, that if you're going to eat sugar, don't eat it on an empty stomach because it's going to make your blood sugar go crazy. Right. And if you have it and you already have some fuel in you, your body does something totally different with it than if it's on an empty stomach. But I like to say it in a way that just doesn't feel like anything is off limits. And then when I'm actually coaching people, it's like, what actually makes you feel good? What doesn't make you feel good? And I think the more you have less restricted foods, and the more you start managing your mind around the idea that food doesn't control me, and the idea that I can eat whatever I want, but what do I really want and how do I really want to feel? Then, when you think of the processed foods and the sugar foods, I can eat whatever I want, but how do I want to feel if I eat that? Is it going to help me get through my day? I mean, you can actually start thinking this through.
Such a
Right,
powerful
because you're
question.
calming down.
No, such a powerful question. And I do like that you pointed out 80% whole foods or fuel foods, so to speak.
Right.
Otherwise, yes, give yourself some liberty. You also pointed out, though, first the fuel foods if we're actually hungry, and then allowing yourself to have some flexibility, some fun foods or whatever.
That's
And
right.
you mentioned, how am I feeling emotionally while I'm enjoying that? And I love that question. I love that, how am I gonna feel afterwards? Because really, so often, I think to your point of the potato chips, the issue are not the chips. The issue is probably, number one, if it's a habit, if you're doing it every day on the couch after work to soothe because your job sucks and you don't want to deal with it.
That's
Number
right.
two, you're doing it again, you're doing it in front of the TV, so you're not even actually savoring every bite. You're probably opening the bag and then 10 minutes later, you're looking down like, oh, did I just eat that all? What happened to all the chips? You are not actually digesting it, smelling it, focusing on
That's
every
right.
bite, reevaluating throughout the process. Do I actually want that extra handful, or am I
That's
already
right.
content? So I think you gave some really, really great pointers there. And I'm curious, with your thinner piece process, I love that phrase. What other things are aspects of that? So we touched on physical hunger, emotional hunger, mindfulness overall, and we touched on activity. What other things are included in your thinner piece process?
Well, one thing I think is really important to mention is that when you're eating a joy food, it's very important that you're doing it and you're actually enjoying it and you're not filling an emotional hole. So if you're feeling sad and you think potato chips are the answer, it would be much better. And what I work a lot with is teaching people how to feel what they're feeling. So feel it instead of fill it. Right? Because I think a lot of people have trained their brains that when they feel bad, they think they're hungry. And they're emotionally hungry, but the brain doesn't have the capacity to say, oh, this is emotional. The brain and the mind, the brain and body are just saying, oh, we're hungry. And so many people, when they get into menopause, say to me, I'm hungry all the time. And it's because the emotions are so heightened. And if you've been used to filling those emotions with food, you will be eating more and filling more holes because the emotions are so much stronger. And so part of the Thinner Peace process is to learn how to feel it instead of fill it. And it's more of this thing that I'm talking about the discomfort. That you can't be afraid of being uncomfortable. And that many people are afraid that an emotion is going to take them out, that they're not going to be able to recover. And that is never the case. Usually you can't recover because you can't feel it. So you keep repeating the same behavior over and over again because you don't realize that you're filling an emotional hole and your brain is trained to do it. You've trained your brain to do it, right? And what we're trying to do is train our brains to eat when we're hungry and stop when we're full physically and to feel what we're feeling emotionally and to be able to enjoy foods with no nutritious value and really enjoy them.
Really, I think that's so great. And it's like a full circle basically to what we were saying in the beginning too, with the clarity of like, who do you
Yes.
actually want to be? What do you actually want to
Yes.
feel like on a day-to-day
Yes.
basis? And I think the more clarity we can have around that, like, okay, I'm gonna close my eyes and envision my quote unquote perfect day. How do I feel when how do I want to feel when I wake up? What kind
Yes.
of energy levels do I have? Where am I at? Who's with me? What's the room looking like? And so I'm like walking yourself through a perfect day, perfect
Yeah.
regular Tuesday like that, where you're like,
Yeah.
this would be ideal, and then sort of recreating your life from that in a very slow step-by-step process, acknowledging the not losses, but yeah, the cuts we're gonna have to make or the sacrifices we're gonna have to make in order to get there is really helpful, I believe. And you also highlight with your work that there's a big difference for yourself and how you work with your clients now between dieting and coaching. And how do you explain that? Like, let's say you have a first call with one of your clients, or someone's curious about your work, and they're like, "Oh, what kind of diet is the Thinner Peace diet or process?" How do you explain to them the difference between a diet and your coaching?
It's such a good question because seriously, what most people would love from me is for me to tell them what to eat. Seriously. And they really hired me not to do that. But if I could, they would, that's what we all kind of want. Right. And so all I'm saying is, well, first, all we're going to do is we're just going to connect to your physical hunger. So whatever you want to call this, we're just going to see if you can put numbers to your hunger and to your fullness. Because it's the beginning. Instead of following a diet, you're going to follow what is actually your own connection to yourself. When do you need to eat? When do you need to stop? When do you need to feel something? When do you need to do something? Right? It's like this 50-year-old mark and this menopause thing that has occurred in our bodies is by design. And I think, boy, it'd be really interesting to see. I think most of us women probably do our best work in the world after 50. And I think it's because of this transition that we make at this time.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's so empowering. And so, like, I think really can give a whole different perspective because a lot of times people think, or women think, this is the worst or least comfortable, least nice time within their life. And I think you're
Yeah.
just putting such a wonderful spin on it, where it's not just a period that you can tolerate, but one where you can actually thrive.
Yes, and I also think it's a time that you have to put some time and energy into your body. Your body is screaming for help. And so it's probably that's when you have to decide, do you want to do hormones? Do you not? How do you want to eat? What kind of fuel is actually going to work for you? Not to lose weight. What is actually going to work for you? That because food really is our medicine, probably more than anything that we'll ever do. One thing in menopause, if you want to feel better, start using food as medicine. If you do nothing except realizing that what you put in your mouth and when you put it in your mouth, you are making a huge input on your own physical health every single time, more so at this stage of life than any other time.
Yeah, that's
It
very,
is a
very, very
wake-up
true.
call. It's a wake-up call, and it's a second chance. You know, it's kind of
Amazing.
like I look at there's adolescence and then there's menopause.
I love it. No, that's honestly wonderful. Deb, thank you so much for all the wisdom you've shared with us today. I
My
am
pleasure.
100% certain that we have given the listeners something new and some applicable
Good.
things for their life. So truly, thank you so much. I will obviously make sure to link all your work, your socials, and so on in the show notes so people can go check out your podcast, Thinner Peace, can check out just your work, your process, Thinner Peace process, and everything that you put out otherwise also. So truly, thank you for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Deb. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go. If you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for a chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.